Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Future Footsteps, a special series of shows here on Open Lab in the run-up to TEDx Delft Villa on the 29th of March. And for today's edition of the show, the final one, we speak to one of our headline speakers, and we shouldn't have favourites, but it is quite possible that Bob Trafford, or Robert Trafford, as he is also known, is a journalist by training and could be one of our favourites. He's an assistant director with Forensic Architecture, a human rights research agency based at Goldsmiths, University of London. There he leads investigative research projects, writes and edits for exhibitions and publications, and supports other team members to bring investigations to publication and to think about how research can be activated in pursuit of accountability. So, without further ado, Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Joan, for that very generous introduction.
So how did this all come about? Obviously, you're not based in Ibiza. How did you get involved in being part of TEDx Delft Villa?
I responded to an email that came to Forensic Architecture's inbox. We are fortunate enough to get lots of requests from interesting organizations and groups all around the world to come and share our thinking with them. And I have to say, coming to Ibiza in order to do that is probably one of the most exciting commissions.
bit of a no-brainer, basically.
Oh yeah, it's also my birthday on the day that I arrived, so I wasn't going to let anyone else in the team have it.
Oh, now you're in trouble, because basically I'm going to have to say that on stage as I introduce you as you come on.
But that'll be an easy start for me.
The cat is out of the bag. What is forensic architecture?
It's a very good question, and there's a few different answers. I'd like to say that if you asked any member of our team, you'd get a different answer, because one of our strengths is that we bring together people from lots of different disciplines. And everyone who comes to work with forensic architecture is interested in human rights, in protecting human rights, in advocating for the importance of human rights, something that has maybe never been more pressing. We are a human rights research agency. We're based out of the University of London at Goldsmiths College, and we make videos and other digital storytelling environments and experiences, websites, platforms, to tell stories about our investigations into human rights violations all around the world. So as you said, I'm a journalist by training, and our work is kind of journalistic in some respects. You know, we're interested in finding things that people don't know and bringing them to the public and telling stories about them. But we're also academics, we're activists, we are advocates. We don't mind being honest about what we think is right in the world and how we're going to fight for it. And so we're really happy to see our research in newspapers and on the front pages of the biggest media organizations in the world, which we surely have been. But we also take our work to exhibitions, gallery exhibitions. We also activate our work in courtrooms, in political inquiries. We're also, you know, we like to say that our work is active from the courtrooms to the streets and everywhere in between.
Okay, that's quite a broad spectrum of response. I mean, how are you activists? What are you kind of working on in terms of the advocacy and the things that you're actively pursuing and the kind of changes you want to make?
But I think one of the things that we really see in the world at the moment is that it's not enough to have the facts these days. It's not enough just to know that what you're saying is true, because the people with the loudest voices and the loudest megaphones are decreasingly interested in whether what they're saying is true or whether what anyone else is saying is true. And that means that we want to advocate in support of human rights and in support of justice and accountability for people who, you know, maybe have lost family members to the police or to or in conflict, if we want to fight on behalf of people who've been dispossessed by states or who have been exploited by corporations, then it's not enough for us to find out what's true and then talk about it in the old-fashioned ways. We need to innovate in how we tell stories, not only how we communicate with publics, but also how we bring publics into our coalition, how we turn people from audience members to allies and get them fighting on our behalf as well and on behalf of the communities and the individuals for whom we're working.
How do you innovate the way you're telling stories?
As I mentioned, we want our work to be active in as many different places as possible. When I got into journalism, I never imagined that I would be part of an organization that was winning awards for its art exhibitions. I never imagined that I'd be going to present in front of political inquiries or producing work for national or international courtrooms. But for us, that's the innovation, that we don't feel that we can tell stories in only one place, that we need to think about what hat we wear, what voice we speak in order to achieve the right results, depending on the case, depending on the context. And I had something else I wanted to say there and I forgot what it is, sorry.
You sound like me, I forget everything, it's okay. With regards to the beginning of that journey of journalism, like where did it all start from you?
So I was a freelance reporter in my mid-20s. I kind of came to it fairly late. I hadn't really done any journalism at university or anything like that. I studied philosophy at university, which obviously doesn't lead you into any career path whatsoever. And then I tossed around for a few years traveling. I came back to the idea of telling stories about things that I thought were important, which was something which I'd realized was something really important to me. I actually began my journalism through volunteering in refugee camps in Chios in Greece and also in Calais in France. And so I began writing from those experiences and from those environments. It's fair to say I was quite a junior freelance reporter when I ran into forensic architecture. It was the luckiest break of my life so far, quite honestly, to meet this organization and to have my understanding of what storytelling in the public interest could look like. Mm. And maybe with that idea, what does storytelling look like? I remember what I wanted to say a moment ago, which is exactly that. You won't find many other organizations who spend time in courtrooms and spend time in art galleries. And you can imagine when we go into courtrooms, the lawyers on the other side, they say, what are these artists doing in this courtroom? They say, why do we need to listen to these artists? What qualifications do they have to be in? And then when we go into art galleries, we see people say, well, these guys, they're nerds, they're scientists, they're technicians. Is this even art? I had this in a question. I gave a lecture just last night and somebody was telling me exactly that. I don't see why this work is art. It's too informational. It's too factual. And we find that tension, that question of how should you tell stories in different spaces? What are you trying to get out of what kinds of storytelling? And should you even be in this room? Are you not in the wrong room? We find that tension really, really productive. That's where we find that we learn quite a lot about our craft, about the stories we want to tell, but also about what kind of storytelling is fit for the 21st century and the world that we see ourselves in today. Mm. And a lot of that is what I'm going to talk about on the 29th.
Ooh, I hope I haven't ruined your talk. I haven't.
Not at all.
Okay, good. I mean, how did you find the process of crafting a talk out of, this vast array and spectrum of storytelling and forensic research that you do?
I have to say the team at TEDx.Vila has been extremely helpful in helping me to understand what's a path to plot through all of this research and these ideas, what kind of things can really stand alone in 10 minutes of presentation. They've been really, really great. For me, there's a couple of questions which have just been hanging over the 8 years that I've spent at Forensic Architecture. I joined in 2016, 2017. And in that time, the world and the way that we communicate in the world has changed so much. These ideas that I'm talking about storytelling, about the connection between facts, their presentation and their impact, and then the structures into which those facts are spoken, international law, human rights, accountability, all of that stuff has changed so much in the last 8 years. At the same time, we're in a completely different information environment, completely different technological environment. 2016, I think about maybe 50, 60% of the global north had smartphones. And now, you know, we're above 90%. So we're talking about a tremendously different information environment. And it's that arc for me, when I came back to thinking about what, you know, what not what does forensic architecture want to say on this stage, but what do I want to say on this stage? For me, it came back to that. What's changed in that time that I've been at this organization, been lucky enough to be part of an organization which has experimented a lot, which has been at the forefront of a lot of different experiments in these kinds of topic areas I'm talking about. And so for me, it all came back to how I can distill what I've learned on that journey, what questions are still open. And let's be honest, as we look forward to a pretty scary 2025, pretty scary few years coming up ahead, difficult days ahead for truth, for human rights, for the world that we knew. I want to try and share a few things that are on our mind in our office when we look ahead to what this world really looks like right now.
How difficult do you think it is to get, you know, people always kind of refer to journalists. I mean, I've been one myself for almost 20 years and, you know, they always say, oh, well, you know, journalists are dictated to by editors or, you know, owners of newspapers or organizations and they're fed this or they're told that they can say this or say that. I mean, how much do you think that's actually true?
I mean, we know that it's true in some circumstances, in some cases, in some formats, in some media organizations, and we also know that it's not in others. You know, I mean, it remains, you know, one of our most important practices, of course, journalism, storytelling in general. I think what I was feeling as I was studying 2016, I was studying journalism in London. And it felt to me, you know, I was studying my MA while Trump was elected for the first time. It really felt like, oh, okay, something big is happening here and the world is potentially not keeping it. There's a guy out here who's just lying vigorously and everyone knows it. And all the tools we've got, doesn't matter how many videos we make, doesn't matter how much we write about it, doesn't seem to do a thing. And that I understood as quite a challenge to a particular kind of journalism, particularly kind of political reporting, international reporters. There's a serious challenge going on here. And at the same time, then we had the early years of the Syrian civil war, where we'd seen that for the first time in really a long time. I mean, this was like the first conflict of the social media era, right? So that meant that because of the way that ISIS and the Assad regime were operating, journalists just didn't want to go there. They weren't safe there. But at the same time, everybody with a smartphone was throwing information up into the open internet. And that meant that, so not only on the one side of the world, you have this tremendous challenge of voice, of how do you, what do we say about a person who lies all the time and about a mode of operating, a mode of politics where the truth, where you're kind of a sucker if you stick to the truth and you're falling behind. And then on the other side of the world, we had a completely different way of reporting because the traditional reporting mode that the foreign correspondent going there, coming back, telling you what they saw, that didn't work anymore because they'd go there and they'd get killed. Instead, what we had was tons of fragments of video. And so we had to work out how to make stories out of those that we could be sure of in the same way that we could say, no, this still stands up to our editorial standards. You know, where on earth did these videos come from? Have they been faked? How do we prove that that video is of the thing that it said it is and not some another explosion that happened a week before? So when I was studying, it felt like on two sides, really at the kind of both ends of the journalistic process, the finding it out and the telling the world about it, we just had this tremendous rupture, like everything was changing. So, yeah, journalism can still be fit for purpose, for sure. Of course, we all know there are good journalists and bad journalists. There are journalists who are doing their job for the betterment of the world, and there are journalists who are doing their job because... I'm not going to be rude about any journalists. I don't need to be rude about journalists on radio. It's not good. Not good for your job prospects. But let me, you know, there are good and bad journalists, aren't there? There are good and bad people in every profession. But it is a profession which needs to respond to the challenges that are coming its way seriously fast. I mean, it's already a few years behind, right? We've got these problems at both ends. We've got, you don't know how to talk about the people in politics who just lie constantly. You've got journalists being killed in war zones, and all that we can rely on is fragments of images. And at the same time, nobody's paying for any of this, and the rug's being pulled out, and there's no money. So there must be professions in which there are greater challenges, but journalism is up there right now.
For sure. Terrifying, really. And I think that it's great that your talk actually addresses the danger. I mean, one of my dreams when I first started out was to become a foreign correspondent. I did go and work at CNN straight out of university, like a week after I graduated. And I was it just wasn't quite what it cracked up to be. Quickly realized, I think, as I pursued that journey a little bit further, wanting to be like the next KAD, that
sure.
I didn't really want to die to be a journalist. Like, journalism wasn't important enough to me after I'd watched some bombings and been sent into some very dicey situations. It just wasn't a situation that I felt was worth gambling with death for. And I think, you know, the pursuit of truth is extremely important. But, you know, how important is it, you know, and how much truth actually filters back from those kinds of scenarios these days? So I think it's going to be very interesting to hear your talk, because I know that it dives into some of those themes, and exciting that you've kind of gone straight in there with some pretty strong ideas.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to be all too miserable. that wonderful TEDx Dolph Villa team did tell me to end somewhere vaguely hopeful, so I think I've got
like that. A Walt Disney film. Give it a happy ending.
Give the people what they want. Yeah, we'd all love some happier endings these days. Working in human rights is about hope. Hope is integral to human rights. We have to maintain a hope in a better future, a better tomorrow, in the faith that we have in people around us, and in our capacity to overcome the endless suffering that gets thrown at us. So I hope I can find a little hopeful note to end on the 29th.
I think you found it by now, Bob. We're so close to showtime. I think you and I are slightly like, ooh, how's this going to end? It's going to be okay. That's the main thing. It'll be all right on the night. That's what Michael Barrymore said or something. Thank you so much for joining us here on Open Lab on the Future Footsteps. Incredible, incredible series. I've so loved hosting this special series of shows in the run up to the 29th of March, and there are still a handful of tickets left, if that. So if you do want to grab one, please do go to tedxdolphvilla.com. Bob, we're going to see you on the 29th of March. Thank you so much for joining us and being our headline special final guest. How does it feel?
It's been a pleasure. Yeah, got me very excited. I can't wait to be out on the island, and I look forward to seeing you and some of these listeners there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Perfect.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.